like to make this as interactive as possible. I learn as much from you as you will learn from me, and you'll learn from the others in the room. But the only way that can happen is if we all share. So if you have a question or you want to make a comment, raise your hand. Okay? Is everyone in agreement on that? Okay. How many of you heard me speak before? Okay, this is my fan over here, Scott. Okay? So tonight we're going to talk about personal brand. And I'm sure just like elevator speech, networking, all these words are getting kind of redundant. But the idea with a personal brand is consistency. We want to have consistency. Meaning if you say something about yourself, you want it to carry through in all the mediums. So we're going to talk more about this tonight. So we're going to define it, we're going to market it, and then we're going to talk about how to negotiate with it, okay? Because you all have value. And that's the other thing that I want to drill into your heads. You all have value. We all are unique, but what makes us unique you? What makes us stand out in front of others, especially when we're going head-to-head against other candidates in a job search? How many of you are in an active job search? So what does all this have in common? Anyone want to give me an idea?
Brands,
okay, what else? Most of them are. Most of them are.
Name awareness.
They're successful.
Self-promoters.
Self-promoters.
Name awareness.
Name awareness. Also, if you look at some of these brands, we'll call them brands, and I'll point out Oprah, Madonna, and Miley Cyrus. What is unique, or what is common between the three of them? Anybody know?
They're all women.
Okay, well, that's one factor. I didn't think about that, but yes, they are all women. What else? Almost, yes.
Entertainers?
They're entertainers.
Their appearance is all identical. The way they, you always see Oprah like that. You always see Madonna is similar to that, except for she's on show. And Miley Cyrus, they always have that special, sharp, crisp, awesome, you know, outlook.
Yes, but the other thing that you're all missing here is that they have a common brand, but they've evolved over time. Think about Madonna back, and I know most of you in the room remember Madonna, okay? But remember Madonna with the cone-shaped pink outfit, you know, and Like a Prayer, and she had her, you know, her gloves and all of this. But she's still the same person to this day. We still think of Madonna the same way, not going back 20 years, but it's the same message. Oprah has been very successful. She had her own TV show for how many years? And now she has the own, you know, the own network. She has magazines. She does this. She does that. She has evolved over time. Miley Cyrus, for how much most of us don't like what she's doing these days, but what she's trying to do is break out of the Hannah Montana mindset. And she's not going after those teenage girls anymore. She's trying to be looked at and viewed as an entertainer, a successful entertainer, but she's also trying to be viewed as an adult entertainer. So what I'm trying to say to you is that your personal brand has to be consistent, but it does have to evolve. You know, I was talking to Philip before everybody came in, and we talked about the fact that people will say, oh, that's for young people, or I can't do this, or I'm scared to do that. But the reality is that we all have to evolve over time. I'm a perfect example of that. I got laid off twice in 1991. If you remember 1991, it was not a good year in the economy. And I was a recruiter. Yes, I wallowed and I cried for a little while and I got over myself. Then I started my own company. Did search for many, many years. But I was getting what I felt was stale. I felt my brand was getting stale. So I went in, I got my coaching degree, I've done assessments, I now teach at Bryant University, but I'm still the same, my brand is still the same. People who know my brand know who I am. So my point is that as you start to figure out who you are, yes, go back in time, but talk to people who know you. What is it that makes me unique? Why are you friends? Why have I been successful in this and not successful in this? Why have I taken certain risks that have worked? And a risk that you took 10 years ago may not work today. So my point is you have to be very open-minded, but you have to start to pin down who you are. Does that make sense to everybody? Go ahead.
Actually, I kind of like to understand a little bit better what is behind, okay, yes, you've evolved, but you still have the same brand. So explain, like, is your brand being a recruiter? Or is it something else? Explain to us what you bring.
So my brand is I motivate people, regardless. I motivate people regardless of what I do. So as a recruiter, if I have a candidate, I'm motivating them to look at this job. I deal with my clients. I motivate them to hire my candidates or work with them as a partnership and try to create solutions for them. As a coach, needless to say, I'm motivating you to achieve your goals. So if you want to term one word for me at all, motivator. That's why I'm known as Coach Carter. Remember the movie?
So it sounds like what you're saying, when we look at our brand and try to define it, we want to understand what we actually do.
You don't necessarily need to have a title. Motivator is not really a title.
That's what I mean.
Right.
It's behind it.
Right. What's behind what you do? So the example I give most men, and don't take this personally, but picture yourself in Toys R Us, okay? Everybody been in Toys R Us? You know the doll aisle? You look at the Barbies, right? You pick a Barbie due to hair color, dress, whatever. The Ken dolls look almost alike, right? So you have to figure out, if you're physically in that box, why is that child going to take that box? As I said, we're all unique. What makes us unique? So when it comes down to two candidates, why are they going to pick you over her? But you have to know who you are. So part of tonight is to try to identify more who you are. And we don't spend enough time doing that, right? Do you really go around, who has children? Okay, so do you sit down with your children and say, okay, describe me. Describe me. Tell me who I am. Ask your children. Very interesting question, because they'll come up with, here, I'm bringing some over here too. They'll tell you things about you that you didn't think about. Some of the behavioral questions that we ask, and we'll get more into this later, is what color would you be and why? Sir, what fruit would you be and why? Why? They had a quick answer. We like that. So the sheet I gave you, you don't necessarily have to fill it out now, but the idea of this sheet is to help you define what your brand is. And what I suggest to people usually is to go through the sheet, and as I said, you don't have to do it now, I just wanted you to have it, is that you circle all the ones that apply to you, then narrow it down to like five, maybe four. And the idea is then again, you're trying to narrow down what you're all about. Ask your friends, ask your family, ask colleagues or former colleagues, what is it about you? What is it about me that makes me different? Because they'll give you different answers that you might not have thought of. Now, my office manager's here tonight, but my former office manager, one time I got asked that question. I was being interviewed to pick up a new search, and she was in the room, and she got off the phone. She said, well, you're very organized. I don't think of myself as super organized, but she felt I was. That was the perception she had of me. So it's not only what you think of yourself, but more importantly, too, is how others perceive you. I mean, my children will tell you one thing, and my friends will tell you something else, but eventually it does come around that I try to motivate people. I do what I can to motivate. If it's a child, I work with students, I work with adults, I try to motivate people. I try to get them to reach their goals. Tonight I'm trying to motivate you to figure out what your brand is, okay? So the idea is, but if you think about it, and look what happened to him, right? He wasn't watching the ball. His brand went down, and he's going to have to figure out a way to get that brand back up again. I used to have Tiger Woods' picture up on the screen. Now look, he's come back. Why? Because his brand is that he is a phenomenal golf player. Forget his personal life. He is a really good golfer, and he's been able to consistently have a good game. If his game totally went off the screen, he wouldn't be around to this day. But when you think of Tiger Woods, you really do still think of him as a phenomenal golfer, okay? Anybody have questions on this? So where do you start? Okay, you've seen this picture before. I love this picture. So my feeling is you gotta start with the foundation of your house, right? So here's the foundation, core values. Do you know what your core values are? Anybody wanna share? Anybody know what their core values are? I would think honesty might be some, what, go ahead.
I was gonna say honesty, hard working, dependable.
Okay. And this woman right here, you want to add to what's yours?
Ethical, communicator.
Okay. Integrity might be one. If you want a list of those, you will have my email address. I can email you 75 of them. Okay? But the point is that you need to know what your core values are. I had a coaching client recently, went on a bunch of interviews. One of the companies, she walked out and really felt that the company wasn't ethical. It was just a gut feel. She asked questions, didn't get the right answers. All of a sudden, all these red flags went up. And her core value, one of her core values, is integrity. It wasn't going to work for her. So no matter how desperate some of you may be looking for a job, if it doesn't fit your core values, your house is going to go tumbling down, and you'll be looking for another job. And in the process, you will be miserable. So what you have to do is identify what your core values are. The roof is your goals. Could be looking for a job. It could be finding a mate. It could be losing weight. I don't care what it is. But the roof is your goals. So again, going back to the core values, even if it's something like losing weight, you still have to have those core values. Meaning, like, if you joined a gym and you felt there were some issues or whatever, and it went against, maybe it wasn't dependable, maybe it was closed half the time, or whatever the issue may be, you're not going to go back to that gym, and then you're not going to lose the weight, if that's the way you're looking at it. The steps, needless to say, are the steps to get to the goal. And what I tell people is the chimney is there, because all the bad stuff that you realize you don't need to do goes out the chimney. And the windows are your windows to opportunity. Opens your mind to new ideas. As you go through this process tonight, or you come to another event, or you're still continuing, it's a journey. The idea is to learn more about yourself. Because if you think of it more about as learning about yourself, and then it's a journey, and it's self-exploration, it's not as painful as saying, I'm looking for a job. Right? And I've been in your shoes twice, so I understand that. And some of you, I know, need a job tomorrow. But the point is, you want to be happy with the job you're in. But if you don't know really what you're looking for, how do you know what job to get? How many of you have advocates? People who know you as well as you know yourself. How many advocates would you say you have?
I mean, I have three or four. I mean, I have several. I mean, yeah, okay. People know.
2 to 3.
Okay. You should have 25 advocates minimally that know you as well as you know yourself. Now, what does that mean? They should have your resume. They should know your core values. They should know what you're looking for. You should update them periodically. They should be marketing you as much as you're marketing yourself. Why should you be doing this job search all by yourself? Seriously, why should you be doing it yourself? I never did my job search all by myself. But they have to understand your brand. They have to understand who you're about. Because if they don't understand that, they're going to market you wrong, right? And that's what defeats the purpose. I mean, people say my second company is Carter Consulting. No, it's Carter Consultants. Get it right. And my company is a search firm. Beth Carter Enterprises is a coaching company. Get it right. So my advocates, I email periodically. I tell them what I'm up to, so that they can continue to market me in different ways. If you're in a job search, you should take your, I'll give you a quick tip here. You email yourself, you blind copy your advocates. You say, I am in a job search, or I'm looking for a new opportunity. These are the things I'm looking for. Don't want to relocate, or I want them to pay for my education, whatever the issues are, like 3 bullets, nothing major. Please find attached a copy of my resume. I'd appreciate any help, including forwarding it on to others. Thank you very much. No hugs and kisses. Beth, right? The beauty of that email is then they can hit the forward button, and what do? They forward it on to some other people, right? But if you write a mushy email, they're not going to forward it. Out of sight, out of mind, too. So if you got their attention for that minute, hopefully they'll forward it on to somebody else. So everybody remember the old shampoo commercial where she told two friends who told two friends who told two friends? It's the same concept. The idea is that you want these advocates to help you, to promote you, to get you that job. Because they have their own networks. So let's do some math here. You send it to 20 people, and they each forward on to 2 more people. How many people have you touched? Answer?
60 to 80.
Thank you. Usually people say 40. 60 people you've touched by one push of the button. So you need to figure, and advocates can be family, friends, former colleagues, former bosses, people who worked for you. You have to figure this out. But again, it goes back to understanding your core values, your goals. You know, if I was looking for a job and I put in my email that I want to stay in Connecticut, then they're not going to forward it on to someone in, they might forward it on to someone in Oregon who has connections in Connecticut, but they're not going to forward it on to somebody in Missouri because you're not going to Missouri, right? So you have to make sure that your message is clear. But first, you got to figure out what the message is. Once you go through this exercise and circle here and kind of figure this out, then if you haven't written your resume, you can write your resume. How many of you have resumes? How many of you have career summaries in your resumes? Okay, if you don't have a career summary in your resume, I'm telling you now, get one. Why? Anybody know why a career summary is so important?
Because they don't usually read the resume.
Thank you. How much time do you get on a resume read? Take a guess.
5 minutes.
Try 6 seconds. Used to be 20 seconds. It's down to 6. Good question, because I've got that. Career summary is in the top of your resume. It is your Nike swoosh. It is a brief summary of who you are. It is the only part of your resume, if you think about it, that is not fact in the true sense of the word, meaning you worked at these jobs, these were your responsibilities, these were your dates, this is your education, these are the things you belong to. It's all fact. The career summary is the only part where you can let your personality shine. You can go to this piece of paper, and if you circle 3 things, you can put that in your career summary. So as an example, you could sit there and say, we don't want to say you're aggressive, but you could say collaborative, dependable, and enterprising sales professional. There, I started writing the first line of the career summary, okay? Excellent communication skills, interface with CEOs and other senior management, marketing, if you're into marketing, finance, have experience in financial analysis and financial planning. IT, you can talk about maybe some of the types of platforms you work on, things like that. The point is that if they don't read anything else, they have a good snapshot of who you are. The problem is, it's the hardest part of the resume to write. Everything else is fact, right? It's easy. But the career summary is hard. So that's why you go back to this piece of paper and you go to this and you start to kind of put together sentences of who you think you are. Then what I tell people is go for a walk. Let it sit for a day. Go back to it. It will evolve over time and it will change. Just as your brand stays the same, your message may change a little bit. Okay? But the point of it is that it's like a good book. If you read the first paragraph of the book, it gets you, what are you going to do? You're going to read the rest of the resume. Right? Once you get that career summary done too, guess what? It helps you with your 60-second commercial. It helps you with the 30-second commercial. It helps you when you leave a voicemail. It helps you to tell your advocates who you are. So once you get it done, it paves the way for everything else. How many of you are on LinkedIn? How many are you active on LinkedIn? Okay, this woman behind with a scarf. How many groups do you belong to on LinkedIn?
Say about 8.
Okay. How many have more than 20 groups they belong to?
I don't do much with them, but
okay.
I think there's max, right?
50 is your max.
Okay.
You should belong to 50 groups on LinkedIn. How do you do that? Anybody have any ideas? You go to the top. You go under groups. Put in words. Marketing, Fairfield County, whatever. Start to find groups. You don't necessarily have to join the association to join the group. As an FYI. You'll say your college alma maters, former companies you worked for, all of those you can join too. But like I belong to the Association of Plastic Engineers. I don't actually belong to the association, but I belong to a LinkedIn group. Why, you may ask? Because I do a lot of work in recruiting and I recruit plastic engineers. So they let me in the group. You can always ask. The worst it's going to be is no. So that leads to my father's famous line that I tell in every workshop. Mike Carter said, talk is cheap. What that means is you can always ask. So you can always ask your advocates to forward your resume. You can always ask to join LinkedIn groups. You can always ask to do this, or you can always ask to do that. Yes, it's a risk, which is one of the worst 4-letter words in a women's dictionary. So is fear, fail, and dare. But dare can be a positive, too. I just finished a 6-week group coaching session program that I did with women. It just happened to be women. And I dared them all to try something different. So a bunch of us are doing mozzarella in September. Check back with me on that one. Does anybody know what mozzarella is? Mm-hmm. 5-mile obstacle course in the mud.
Oh, mozzarella.
Mozzarella, yes. That's what happens when I, on a coaching session, dare women to do something. That's what we're all doing. But my point is that you need to ask. So don't be intimidated on LinkedIn. LinkedIn also is not a regurgitation of your resume, meaning you do not cut and paste. So get the resume done first, get that career summary done, truncate it down, change a few words, and there's your summary on LinkedIn. Okay? Does that make sense? Does anyone think they have a really good LinkedIn profile? You're happy with it? It's a bio though, right? A profile? It's not your resume.
No, it's not my resume.
Perfect. I hope you all will link in with me tomorrow, by the way. I expect you all to. You guys all send me invites, okay? I got two of you. Okay, so you need to get on LinkedIn. If you don't know how to use LinkedIn, find someone that can help you with it. I'm serious. Because going back to the advocate thing and my thing, or my math problem, you send it to 20, they each send it to 2, you got 60 people. LinkedIn, you join one group of 1,000 people. You can post on the start of the discussion, looking for new opportunity. Maybe put a couple sentences about who you are. You've touched 1,000 people, okay? I belong to 50 groups on LinkedIn. I am always doing stuff on LinkedIn. I didn't look at my number this today, but I think I'm up to 15 million people somehow are connected to me. 15 million. In the old days, you just had to mail out 300 resumes. Now you can hit a button in seconds. I'll give you an example. I had a student from Bryant University shadow me for a day. I taught her how to use LinkedIn. This was 3 years ago. She was looking for an internship. That night she posted she was looking in for an internship. Within 24 hours, she got that internship. And you're like, oh, but she's a young girl. She's this, she's that. Baloney. Any one of you can get a job through LinkedIn because why? Us recruiters are using LinkedIn. Keyword searches, we pull you up. And please, do you have a nice picture?
Yeah.
You're happy with your picture? Headshot? Okay, you need to know her. You should talk to her. She knows what she's doing. Headshot, okay? Not full body, men, jackets, tie, we want to see it, okay? No open shirts, women, watch the makeup. I had one woman, financial woman, great person. I went on her LinkedIn profile, I was like, are you kidding me? So she comes to the coaching session, I said, you got to change that picture. She said, I know, but it makes me look young. I said, no, it looks like the Rocky Horror Picture Show. She had big, bright red lips. That's all I could think about was the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I said, I just feel like you're going to gobble me up. And I'm like, that's not going to work. I said, because we look at the picture. We can't hide anymore. Everyone sees you. Okay? So the point is that, and then if you're on Facebook, be careful what you post on Facebook. How many of you tweet? Anybody tweet? One Twitter. Two tweets. Okay. Whatever picture you have on LinkedIn should be the exact same picture on Twitter. Consistent message, okay? Eventually you all, I hate to say it, we will all be tweet, I tweet, but eventually a lot of more of you will be on Twitter. But the picture should be consistent. Everything you should do, so my Facebook picture is the same as my Twitter picture, which is the same as my LinkedIn picture. It's consistent, okay? But pick a good picture too. Please, I'm begging you, you should see some of the things I tell people. I had one woman, she was like this. Beautiful, hair up, beautiful. I said, that was like out of a wedding, wasn't it? She said, yeah, I was a bridesmaid. I said, nix it. That's good. You know, you could show that to your friends on Facebook, but not a picture for LinkedIn, okay? Again, it's the whole package, okay? But if you're not on LinkedIn, I'm telling you, 48 hours I give you, get yourself on LinkedIn, okay? That's the tough coach in me. Go ahead.
Could you circle back to the groups again real quick? Because the groups, if you're not authentic in one of those groups, you're almost, you can become a stalker. And you don't want to be labeled as a stalker if you're not participating in the group and in the conversations. So how do you get around joining a group and then asking for a referral or saying I'm looking for a job?
Because it's not really stalking. Because you're not doing it every day, changing the topic. You're going in once maybe and saying I'm looking for a new opportunity. But then what you can do, because you want to stay in front of people, maybe you're reading some Fairfield Patch and there was some great article that you think the group would be interested in, say, you can post that as a discussion, great article, and hit the link.
Okay, so you're establishing yourself first for yourself.
No, you can do, you could first say you're looking for an opportunity. I've done that. And then you can go ahead. The only problem with LinkedIn, and I'm in trouble with LinkedIn right now myself, because I've sent out so many invites, they've kind of like, but you guys will never get to that point. I mean, I send out thousands of invites because I'm trying to get around calling people when recruiting sometimes, like if they're secretaries and stuff. But usually they don't, if you keep posting every day you're looking for an opportunity, that's stalking. But the idea is that, I mean, I'm on a lot of groups that I don't really do much with. But the point is that you also want those connections. Because when you go to actually interview, so you don't want to just read the profile of the person you're interviewing with. You want to read as many profiles within the company because you want to get a feel for their culture. Maybe everybody's been there 100 years, everybody's new, everybody's from Missouri, everyone's got an MBA, whatever it is. You want to get a feel for the company so when, as you ask questions of the company, you have a feel for it because they have their own brand. I mean, that's why mission statements are so important these days in companies, because it's what they're saying to the world. You know, after Enron and the economy dipping and all this stuff, companies spend a lot of money and time trying to get that brand out there, right? Does that make sense? But if, you just have to be careful. But the point is you should use LinkedIn to your advantage. Even if you join five groups, just make sure you look at how many members there are. Because if it only has three members, you know, and you're up to your 50, you got to be careful. But the point is, three members isn't going to get you very far. So you want to join groups that make sense. How many of you are in, like, finance? Okay, there are a couple of finance people. How about IT? Okay, marketing? Human resources? Okay, YouTube? What are you in? What field?
Customer service.
And you?
Creative services.
Okay. So, but the point is that you can join some of those groups. And you can participate. You know, I write articles for one of my websites normally quarterly. So I got myself as a name because people, so I went to an event in New York for Bryant University, and this man says, oh, you're the one who writes those articles every quarter. Now, Beth Carter is a very common name. But now he looks for those articles. When he sees my name, he knows I've written an article, and he usually reads them. That's pretty good. So there was a warm introduction as I walked in the door. And that's happened to me numerous times. So, and it might not necessarily even be my article. It could be something I've seen that I think someone else, you know, the group would enjoy. And I cut and paste and I stick it in. I'm like, great article, must read it. Okay? So that's how you work it. Because out of sight is out of mind. So you want to keep in front of people's faces. All right, let's keep going here. So there's my house. Okay, so here's some core values. Okay? Freedom is an interesting one, too. Something to think about. If you're used to working in an office, right, you have your own office, and now you're in a cube setting, that may not work for you. I know that sounds kind of a strange one to bring up, but again, you have to know who you are. I cannot work in a cube environment. I can't stand like all the noise and stuff. I like it quiet. That's the way I operate. So it's maybe not necessarily core value in the true sense of the word, but what I'm trying to say is that some people like more freedom in their job, maybe like they like to telecommute or whatever. So keep that as in mind, okay? And zest is a fun one. You want your job to be fun, too, or at least be passionate about it. You want to be able to get up in the morning and really enjoy what you do. So as you're asking, because when you interview, it's 50-50, you know. You're supposed to be asking 50% of the questions. As you ask those questions, you have to relate it back to you and say, is this going to work for me? Is this not going to work for me? Why is it not going to work for me? Yes, you may have to bend a little bit, but is it going to work long-term for you? Because a lot of people, like I've had two rewrites, that I'm a certified professional resume writer. I had two people so far this year come back to me, and I wrote the resume 2 years ago. They're leaving their jobs. They're not happy. And it's because they didn't ask the right questions. I mean, I'm only writing the resume. I'm not getting any further. So I said to them, what's the problem? And they're like, yeah, I should have delved deeper. I should have. But the bottom line is if they don't know who they are, how are they going to ask the questions of the others, right? So it's a dance. You dance a lot, you date a lot, and hopefully you'll have a better marriage, but you got to keep asking the questions, right? Okay, so you need to know your strengths. But the funny part is you also need to know your weaknesses. So I'm also certified in the DISC assessment, which is the behavioral assessment tool. And how it works is you get two graphs, and one is your, like kind of your work, how you are at work, and the other one is how you are at home. And it's how you behave, okay? Not why you behave, how you behave. The funny part is that the natural graph, the one that's at your home state, rarely changes. Unless there's like death or divorce or something like that, rarely changes. The adaptive graph, which is your work graph, they call it the mask graph because you wear a mask potentially at work. Okay? You ideally want the two graphs to be very close together, meaning like you want them so you don't have much discrepancy. But the interesting thing is the natural graph, your home state graph, is based off of the responses of things you least like. So there's four words in a box, there's 26 boxes, it's an online thing. So your least response, things you'd like the least, generate the graph for your natural state. So the point of that is that if you tell me you like steak, you may still eat pizza or pasta, right? But if you hate broccoli, you really hate broccoli. So my point is you need to figure out what your strengths are. You also need to figure out your weaknesses, and you need to figure out your deal breakers, right? I mean, we don't work in offices of people who smoke anymore, but back in the old days, you know, I wouldn't work with a smoker, right? So these are the types of things. Maybe you can't work with a boss who's a micromanager, or you can't do this, or you don't like, you really, really, really don't like these things. You can't compromise on that. Those are your deal breakers. You need to figure out what those deal breakers are. But you also have to look very closely at yourself. There may be limitations in your behavior, okay? You have to think about that. Awareness of others. How do you interact with others? I work out of a home office setting. I like that. I have worked in office settings, and I'm productive, but I'm much more productive, I know, over years with working out of my home. But I also know how to deal with different people, too. Like, I just had an introductory business development call. The woman wasn't interested in the cost of my recruiting services. Cost was not the factor. It was a family-run company. She was very interested in me getting to understand the culture of the company. That was important to her. If I had gone through like I used to do and just sit there and give my spiel, I would have focused on the cost factor. Luckily, I had talked to the CFO the week before, and he mentioned that culture was very important. So all my questions were about culture. So I was aware of what was important to her. So you have to figure out what is important to the hiring manager and the hiring company. As the expression is, what's in it for them? But if you don't know who you are, and going back to this again, then how are you going to know what's in it for them? You need to be aware of both sets, you and them, and how is it going to mesh? Well, team building is really not a value. Conflict, how are you going to be productive? And needless to say, you want credibility, okay? You have to think about these things. So again, these are just things about yourself. Are you an introvert? Are you an extrovert? Are you people-oriented? Are you task-oriented? How do you talk to people? Okay? How do you talk to people? Meaning, if you're talking to a CEO and you're going to deal with CEOs, you're going to talk at this level, more strategic. If you're talking to people who are the worker bees, you're going to talk to them at this level. As you're interviewing, you may have up to 25 interviews before you get this job. Are you kidding me? Yes, I know this for a fact because I ran a survey on LinkedIn and asked how many interviews you had before you got the job. 25 was the highest number. I pray to God none of you go through that. 10 was the norm. 10 interviews. Some of them were repeats within the company, but 10 interviews. But you have to be careful of your word choice. If someone's talking to you at a strategic level and you're really a tactical person, you've got to come up to their level. Open-ended questions. How and what questions? Ask them of yourself. Ask others about you. As you're interviewing, ask about them. How long, I understand from LinkedIn that you've been in the company 20 years. You know, what's made you stay? How are you motivated to stay this long? How is your role has changed over time? Behavioral questions are very important. What's the motivation? What is your motivation to join them, and what's their motivation to get you? And we're going to talk more about that when we get to negotiations. Past, you can't bring your past baggage to the table. You can take your past learning experience and your skills, but don't bring the rest of it to the table. So I call people up, you're smiling, you know what I'm talking about here. I cold call people all day long. So I'm catching them off guard. Hey, I'm Beth Carter, I got this job, blah, 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 not in those terms. But the point is, I'll say, well, what made you leave last job? Ah, I had the worst boss. Okay, I had a really bad boss at one point in my career too, but I'm not gonna tell you that. I'm gonna say, well, you know what, I learned a lot from the company, it broadened my skill set, but it was time to move on. I really wanted to get back into X. Not a white lie, just changing the words a little bit, okay? You also have to think about now. This is a journey that you're on. It's a time of exploration. It's a time to learn more about yourself and grow. Because if, again, if you go back to the thing that it's a job search, that doesn't sound very nice. So what I also tell people is that networking is not a great word. Why do we not like the word networking? Anybody want to take a stab at that one? Remember, word choice. Why do we not like the word networking? Because it has the word work in it. Okay? Right? We don't like it. Think of it as growth, personal growth. So you go to a networking event, the next networking event you go up to somebody. Don't think of it that I'm going to get a lead on a job. Think of it as I'm going to learn maybe about a lead, maybe about a company, maybe about a new industry. Maybe I'll learn something completely different, maybe on a personal level. But the idea is I've learned something from another person. My mother is phenomenal in this area. I mean, watching her in a supermarket is like unbelievable. She talks to everybody, but she learns things in the process. But I wouldn't call her a networker. She's growing as a person. So when you go to the next networking event, don't think of it as networking. Think of it as that you're learning something from somebody else. It's an exchange of information. Yes, it may help you, but it may not help you today either. It may help you down the road. But if you do meet someone through LinkedIn or networking or some other way that you feel that they could be used, what is your best investment once you've met this person? Anybody know? You can give them your business card, but you can take it one level more. You ask them if you can buy them a cup of coffee. Call them up, email them. You know, we met at this. I really enjoyed meeting you. I'd love to further our conversation. You're not asking for a job. You're not asking for a job lead. But buying a cup of coffee is the best thing you can do because it builds that bond. You know, it's not what you know these days. It's who you know. And a lot of jobs are not through recruiters or want ads. It's by who you know. So if you meet someone that you think is of value or that you can help them, maybe it's more that you help them, buy them the cup of coffee because it's memorable. If you go on an exploratory interview, anybody been on an exploratory interview? Okay, you know those? What's the last question you ask on an exploratory interview? Thank you. Boy, you're like star tonight. I like this. You got all the answers. What can I do for you? This person is kind enough to spend some of their time with you. What can I do for you? And it could be on a personal level. Meaning like they might say, you know, I got to buy a gift for my wife. I have no idea what to get her. And you say, oh, I saw the scarf. Or you email and say, oh, I thought of this, whatever. Doesn't matter. It makes you unique you. It makes you stand out in their mind. Have you been on an exploratory interview and you asked that question? What was the answer did you get? Remember?
I haven't gotten it. They don't say.
They don't say. Okay. But at least you asked. I'm sure they were nicely surprised that you asked. Right? Goes back to your brand, though. Still goes back to your brand. Because you're all conscientious. You all are caring people. Right? It shows a human side to you, too. You're not just a job seeker. Okay? I'm only bringing up the bad four-letter words, which I brought up already just because they're fun. The worst four-letter word in a women's dictionary is the word brag. Why? Because we were raised not to brag. My mother, the one I mentioned before, she does not like Christmas letters. Why? Because she sees it as bragging. I see it as a quick way to tell everybody what you did in the past year. She sees it as bragging. The point is you got to get over yourself. You're not bragging. You're not even self-promoting. You're exchanging information. See, again, it's a word choice thing. Because when you get over that hump that you're not bragging, because a lot of women, especially women, have an issue with this, you are more confident. You flow better. You're not nervous. You're not, because you're just talking, right? You're just exchanging. Hi, you're in creative service. Oh, really? What do you do? You know, and you just exchange. She's not bragging. She's telling me what she does. But again, it's got to be a consistent message, okay? Does everybody understand that? So you want to identify who I am and does the world agree? So meaning as you establish your brand, check in with people and make sure that it's something that you all understand and that you're all in agreement. Because if you don't know who you are or it conflicts with how people perceive you, then you need to kind of take a step back and say, okay, what's wrong here? So ask others, as I said. And look for common themes. That's the key part of all of this. You know, look for common themes. What is it about you consistently that people say about you? And you might be nicely surprised. I'm sometimes surprised when I check in with some of my advocates and they're like, oh, You know, they'll say something like, really? I didn't think about that. Because you just don't think about yourself all the time, right? You don't think about yourself that way. So take it for that. So someone was asked, okay, see there? There's my mission statement there. This is me. You asked me before, right? This is me. This is, and this took a long time to write because I really wasn't sure what I wanted to say. Because it's not, I want to help others. That is really what I'm all about. You know, 20 years ago it was finding candidates, filling those jobs. I was a recruiter, period. Now I'm more interested in helping others. I do it on all different levels. I come to things like this, I teach, people call me up, you know, I try to help people out. That's what I've evolved. But I'm still hardworking, I still say my piece, you know, I'm still certain things. So if you knew me 30 years ago and you know me now, that part hasn't changed, okay? But the way I do things has changed a bit. My focus has changed a bit. But I can use this as the start of my LinkedIn. I can use this start of my career summary, 30 and 60 second commercials. And you need both, by the way. If you don't know why, I'll tell you why. If you go to a networking event, professional growth event. You all stand up, you say who you are, right? That's 60 seconds. 30 seconds is when you run into someone in the supermarket and you're trying to tell them what you're about. 15 seconds is a voicemail, right? So you kind of really need all three. For the ones that are in the job search, that are unemployed right now, do you all have business cards? Okay, good. If you do not, please get them. Vistaprint, cheap. The ones who do have the business cards, do you have anything on the back of the business cards? What do you have on the back of your business card? What does it say?
Bullet points about me.
Thank you.
Core strengths.
Core strengths. Because if it's just your name and email and phone number and maybe financial analysis person, they're not going to really remember much about you. Because again, that's the Ken doll in the box. They flip you over and they're like, oh, it's Malibu Ken. Or it's, you know, he's got a really cool, you know, trunks, you know, swim trunks. Don't ask me where I'm going with this. But anyway, the point is that it makes you even more memorable. But make sure there is still some white space to write things in, okay? That's the point. Again, but it should be consistent. Now, if for some reason you're in a type of business where your face matters, and I'll give you an example. When my ex-husband started his plumbing business, a lot of people knew he was Paul. He was a plumber, and they knew his face. They didn't know his last name, but this is what they knew. He's in Fairfield. So they knew these three things about him. Well, we put his face on the business card because they knew it was Paul, said he was a plumber, and there's his face. Like, oh, that's Paul the plumber. So I'm not suggesting you put your picture on your business card, but if it makes sense to, then do it, okay? So here's some questions to help you, again, with identifying your brand. Remember a time when something dramatically changed your life. What were the positive outcomes? Lost my job twice in 1991. Started my own company. It's been very rewarding for me, 20-some years later, okay? Another one. If I had another chance, I would, okay? These are thought-provoking questions. These are things you think about after you take long walks. I wish I had the courage to, because what holds us back? Fear of failure? Just the fear itself. A lot of people are fearful, okay? So what you want is to try to get over that fear. Establish why you're scared. Maybe you don't like making cold calls. Maybe you don't like going to networking events. You know, maybe it intimidates you to walk into a room of 60 people and don't know anyone. So if you're at one of those events, my suggestion is to walk up to someone else who's standing alone because I bet they feel the same way you do. But you don't think of it that way, right? You think about it, it's all about you. I'm nervous, I don't really want to walk in here. But the reality is that they're probably as nervous as you are, so then you partner up, right? Also, if that doesn't work, stand by the food. Always tell people stand by the food. Because at least you can say something like, oh, look at the great appetizers they have, right? And it gets people talking. Carol here and I were at an event 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I don't remember how many years ago it was. Anyway, and we stood at one point, if you remember correctly, we stood by the food. And we met the greatest people, but we talked about the food. I mean, it sounds like a crazy thing, but the point is it broke the ice. It gave us something to talk to, start a conversation with. Because chit-chat builds that bond up. You know, even on an interview, you know, we ask questions, you know, I asked about the fruit and the color and stuff. But the reality is that people want to get to know you, to know how you tick. This one, this bottom one, is really more just thinking futuristic. How do you want to be remembered? What do you want to give back? But as you go through these questions and really think about it, again, core values come up, what you're about comes up. Maybe, you know, like I do a lot of work lately in the not-for-profit field, and there's been a lot of corporate executives that have given up that world and gone into the not-for-profit world. I mean, financially they can afford to, but more importantly, they're passionate about the missions that they're in. They've taken huge pay cuts because it's not about the money. It's about the passion behind it. So maybe there's a job out there that maybe you're interested in human services, and you've always wanted to work in that field. Start making connections in that field. Volunteer, whatever. But the point is that maybe that's something, maybe you'll take a pay cut to do something you're passionate about. So it's just, it's more just to think about things. I'm not saying do it or not do it. It's just more to think about things. Okay, so this is the part I really want to focus on tonight. Negotiations. So we talked about how to identify your brand. We've talked about how to market your brand, right? You work with your advocates. You work with LinkedIn. You get your name out there. So now, you're at a negotiation standpoint, okay? Now you're ready to negotiate. People think, especially if you're unemployed, they think that you cannot negotiate. Everything's negotiable. Have you ever walked into a store and asked the shop owner to reduce the price? How many of you have done that? Okay, more of you should do that, okay? You can negotiate anything, especially if it's a small store. You know, if you see $50 and someone's saying, you know what, I'd really like to pay $45 for that. Try it. Can't hurt. Or if you're really intimidated, go into Manhattan and argue with the street vendors because they're fun to, because they expect you to negotiate. They really do. And if you go to a lot of foreign countries, they expect you to negotiate. When you buy a car, do you pay the list price? Do you pay the price on the car?
No.
No. Well, why don't you use it in other scenarios, right? But we don't think to do that. So what you have to do here is when you are marketing and you know, kind of working your network, you have to start to get a feel for what the market's bearing. Now you might say, well, I made 40, so I'm assuming I'm going to get 45. No. You need to find out what other people are making. Times have changed. Maybe you have a skill that she doesn't have, so that might make you more higher compensation. But it's not just about base and bonus here, and that's what people forget. Your compensation is a lot of different factors. Vacation, flex time, base, bonus, perks like health club membership, paying for education, taking a course. There's a lot more to compensation than we think about. So I'll give you an example. A friend of mine just got promoted. She works in Pennsylvania. She's now going to be working in Delaware. So her commute is now doubled. It's going to be an hour-long commute. But it is a promotion. So we've been emailing back and forth. And I said to her, are you going to get more money? She goes, we haven't gotten that far yet. Really? Are you kidding me? I said, well, maybe you could. She goes, well, they're going to let me off a half hour earlier because to make up for the time. I said, yeah, but she went out and had to buy a new car because her car, she was worried over time that the car wasn't going to make it. I said, before you even think to go to Delaware, and she's like, I pretty much have to take the job. I said, but get something else out of it. Talk is cheap. What did my father say? Talk is cheap. What's the worst that you can say? Is, you know what? I would like $10,000 more. Or I would like 5 more days of vacation. You know, my title's gone up. What do all the do your research. What are all the other directors in the company getting? Are they getting 4 weeks vacation? You have 3? Find out. But go in being knowledgeable on so many different levels. There's all kinds of different surveys and stuff like that. In your book, I've given out folders to all of you. I have something about salary negotiations in it. But there's all kinds of websites and everything that you can find out what people are paying. And also it depends on what part of the country you're in. Like you're here in Fairfield County, as we know, is the Gold Coast. So needless to say, salaries are higher. But that doesn't mean if you relocate to Missouri that you should take a pay cut. You know, you can look at your cost of living differentials. You can go on websites. You know, $50,000 here could be $25,000 in Missouri. And maybe you'll compromise and say, you know what, I'll go to 35,000, but I get an extra week's vacation and I work 8 to 5 instead of 7 to 6. Okay? You need to figure out the whole package, and it is negotiable, and I don't care if you're unemployed. Because companies also want goodwill, you know, meaning if they try to undercut you, because people are like, oh, they'll make me take a salary cut because I'm unemployed. No, because if you take a salary cut, probably you're not going to be happy. What's going to happen when the recruiter calls you up, me, and say, oh, I have a job, and it's paying you $5,000 more than the last job? What are you going to do? You're going to look at it. It costs companies a lot of money to lose an employee. Think about it. They pay me, the time. You know, if you put a number on hours in a recruiting assignment, it takes a long time, especially very high-level people. They're not going to sit there and, you know, if they're going to squabble with you over $2,000 or $3,000 or whatever the thing is that you're looking for, if you can't come to a compromise and you're not happy, you're going to jump ship. And they've lost all this money, and it's very short-sighted on their part. Companies are savvy. They expect you to come back to it. But you also have to know your negotiation style. Some of you, like my friend, unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because I really think she could get more, she is more of an avoider. Doesn't really want to get into this. Not interested in really talking about it, okay? Which is understandable. She's been pretty much told that this is what it is. She's an avoider. There's the compromise, which is what I'm saying. You can compromise. You ask this, they ask this, maybe you compromise. The third is you accommodate. Sure, you know, okay, I'll go with that. The fourth one is you're competitive. I am going to get X and this and that and blah, blah, blah. Well, that can backfire in your face too. And then the last one is a collaborative, problem solver, meaning I am a solution to you by hiring me. You have this vacancy. I can bring these skills to the table. I have value. And this is the thing that we don't think about. We are valuable. What is our brand worth? I mean, how much is Oprah worth?
Billions.
Billions, right? How much is Madonna worth?
Same.
Billions. But we're worth something, too. We all have a value. So as you're driving home tonight, say, you know, think about it. Like, okay, I'm worth this. But most of us just think of the cash piece. But we have more value than that. And we need to figure that out. Because that's what they're paying for. They're paying for the value you bring to the table. And we don't think of it in those terms. So you need to know your style and how it matches up with the situation, okay? So if you see a job that pays a lot less money, but it brings you a lot of value in other ways, then you might look at it. As an example, maybe you're into the green movement. You should all be in the green movement, but even more so. So one woman I know, her big thing was she wanted to bike to work. So there was a startup little company. It had all the, she was very passionate about all of this. She wanted to bike to work so she would save her carbon footprint, the whole nine yards. But she was really into it, and she believed in the mission of the organization. So she was willing to take a pay cut because also she didn't have car expenses anymore. Because that's the other thing you have to think about is what expenses do you have? Meaning, do you have to dress up every day? You got dry cleaning costs, you got soup costs. Maybe you can work out of your home 3 days a week. Don't have to have childcare expenses, or you can wear jeans, or whatever. So you have to take the whole thing into consideration. So the ones that are in the job search, how many of you are really taking all of that into consideration? Okay? So you're looking at your costs that you spent, too. Commuter costs. You know, if you're going into the city, you got train or whatever. These are the things you need to think about. You have to determine, of course, your goals and your expectations. Not only what your goal is today, but where do you see it going? You know, how is, what's the, here's a question to ask in a search. What's the 5-year projection of the company? Where do you see the company going? Why are you motivated to stay? I'm talking about talking to the hiring manager, the people in the company. You know, if you like a lot of, I do a lot of work for companies that are owned by private equity firms. So, of course, the fear is, well, they bought this last year. Actually, I have a company that they got bought last year by a private equity firm. Are they going to sell it in a year? Now, some people might think that's really lucrative because if they sell, if they're at a certain level, they would get a lot of money. If you're at the more junior ranks, it could be bad. But it could also be a positive because they're dumping a lot of money into the company and they're buying a lot of equipment. So is it a learning experience? Is it a risk? Or is it this? So you have to kind of make sure everything melts together. Prepare and practice your negotiations. If you're intimidated by negotiating, practice. Just like I tell people to practice phone interviews. Anybody practice phone interviews? Okay, so when you have a phone interview, people tend to be lax. I tell people to dress the part, put a picture of the hiring manager on the wall, because you'll get that off of LinkedIn, hopefully. If not, I tell people to put my picture on the wall. But the reason why I say put my picture on is because at least it's familiar to you. And maybe you'll remember some of the things I tell you. But ideally, the hiring manager, because it warms you up. But you practice. Get people to ask you questions. You know, I caught this man off guard with the fruit question. Now, he came back really quick with the avocado answer. But the point is that a lot of people hesitate or whatever. Practice. So practice negotiations. You know, Carol, okay, I'm going to offer you $40,000 and 10% bonus based on company performance, and you get 2 weeks vacation. Come back to me. What are you going to say? See?
I'm looking for, well, no, I'd probably say, okay, that's an interesting start, so let's talk about that.
I'd like to think about it and let me get back to you.
Think about it, and then I want $50,000, and then we land at $45,000, and then whatever it is.
Right, or she says, I've researched, and the industry is paying X, or your major competitor is paying Y, or I understand all the directors have 3 weeks vacation, and I'm coming in at a director level, I would like 3 weeks vacation. See the difference? But you practice it. Be comfortable, because it's like buying a car. They expect you to negotiate in today's world, but it's intimidating. And people who need a job think, okay, just like my friend feels like she has to do this, yeah, she has to do it. But the point is she can get other things out of this, and I'm pushing her to be a little more aggressive. Yes?
How would you know what the director's vacation days are, though?
So you go on LinkedIn, right? You look at all the bios. You see that so-and-so is connected to so-and-so. And you're friends with, so it's a second link or something. Call up that person and say, I see you're friends with so-and-so. I'd like to call them up. I'm looking at that company. I'd like to learn a little bit more. So you call that person, say, I'm interviewing in the finance firm. Let's say you're in marketing. Say, I'm just, I see that you've been there a long time. What do you like about it? I'm just curious, how many weeks does the director get for vacation? Or I'm looking at this. I'm not saying you have to be sneaky, but you can kind of start to get a feel for what people have. You may not be able to find out, but if you can, take advantage of it. Or ask the question, beef direct with the HR person. Say, how many weeks does a director normally get? Well, they normally get 3, but because you're new, we have new policy. No! Well, if I can't get 3 weeks, then I want something else, right? Like car dealers, if they really want to sell you at the last minute and you're like down to the last thing, what do? They throw in the car mats for free, right? So you want to figure out what the car mats are, okay? That's what you want to figure out. But the idea is to prepare and practice. And give your pitch and be confident about it. That's the thing, because HR people are ruthless, because it's usually HR people you're dealing with. Right? They're ruthless.
The pitch, the elevator, the...
No, this is your negotiation pitch.
Oh,
this
okay.
is. But you, again, if you know what you're all about, and look, I'm a blank, 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 blank. I have all this experience. I've already dealt at the CEO level. I know how to sell to this, or I know how to do these financials, or I know how to do this. I'm worth this. I know that I'm this value. A friend of mine wrote a book called The Salary Tutor. It's a cute little book. You may consider buying it. The one thing, though, I disagree with him in the book, and I was talking to another recruiter about it today, is that he says you should never tell a recruiter your salary. Like, if I call you up and pitch a job and I say, what's your salary? He says you should never tell. I won't proceed with you in the process, just to be honest with you, and this other recruiter agreed with me. Meaning, like, if you won't tell me a comp, our conversation is over, okay? So you can play the game. So you don't want to play the game too much, is what I'm trying to say. That's why you need to practice, and you need to be based off facts. Like, when you go buy a car, don't you go on Carfax or Kelly Blue Book? You look to see what other cars are. You know what the insurance is. Do as much homework as you possibly can, because then you're working on a level of strength because you know what's going on. Then once you get this offer, don't accept the first one, or at least say, let me think about it. Sit down and reassess. Maybe something's come out in that conversation, and ideally make it a conversation, by the way. Don't just necessarily, if it's an email that you get, call them up and say, I'd like to discuss this with you. Because you can hear in their voice maybe what could work, because it's a human thing. So if they send you an offer letter or they send you an email and say, this is what we're looking at, say, my commute is going to be, a lot longer or I'm going to have to do this or the travel is more than I anticipated. I'd like a sign-on bonus. there's something else to think about. Sign-on bonus. You know, I need to buy a new car. And I've had candidates tell me flat out, you know, like if I'm trying to get them to go to Long Island, which I do a lot of recruiting in Long Island, and they're in Manhattan, I have to buy a car. I would need a sign-on bonus. And that's, we talk about it. I'll go back to the hiring manager, we talk about it. Because why not? If you really want this person, and Long Island is the problem, we're not going to buy you the car, but maybe we'll give you 10 grand towards the car. And everybody's happy. It's a win-win. The ideal is you want a win-win at the end of the game. But you have to reassess. Any questions? So the bottom line of all this is that it's all about you. But in saying this quote, get others to help you. As I said, your advocates can help you in so many different ways. And if you don't really know who your advocates are, sit down with a piece of paper and write down everybody you think could be an advocate. Now, I have a cousin in Oregon. There's actually a company called the Carter Hound Company. So if you're looking for hound dogs, he sells them out in Oregon. Now, most people would say, well, why would I send Cousin Jerry my resume? Well, the reality is Cousin Jerry also went to private school in Pennsylvania when he was growing up, and he still has contacts in the area. So if I was looking for a job, I would send Cousin Jerry my resume because he still may have contacts back this way. My point is you never know who knows who, right? So I moved to Rhode Island. I'm not telling everybody this, but I moved to Rhode Island 13 months ago. And I was at a big networking event, 200 people in a room. It was kind of a darkish room. And I'm walking through, I was following a friend of mine, and this woman grabs me. I know you. And talks for 5 minutes. I had no idea what she was talking about. Seriously didn't know. But then she mentions the Bryan Women's Summit. So I speak a lot at the Bryan University Women's Summit, which is actually this Friday. But she had heard me speak like 3 years before. But she remembered me. Do you know the next networking event I went? Somebody said, I know you, Bryan Women's Summit. I was at another event. I'm sitting across a big conference room table. And I said to the woman, I know you. She goes, yeah, I know you too. Bryan Women's Summit. So that's how I'm starting to get my name in Rhode Island, because I've spoken at these events. My point is that you have to keep doing it, though. So once you get this job, don't stop doing things. My homework to you all is once you get a job, or if you have a job, is to go to one networking event a quarter. 4 times a year. That's all I'm asking. 4 times a year. I don't care if it's an association meeting. It doesn't have to be like a career transition networking group. But association meeting, a rotary, chamber, whatever it is in your field, like if there's a, you know, finance, whatever, go to something once a quarter, because you've got to stay in front of people and you've got to keep making contacts and you want to build that LinkedIn network. You don't necessarily need 15 million people like me, but you need to keep building it, because in today's world, it's all about who you know. And social media, if you're not up on social media, hire a college student, if nothing else. I mean, I'm serious. Get yourself a college student, pay them so much, and get them to teach you how to use all this stuff. Because that's what dates you. That's what makes you unmarketable. You've got to stay on top of technology, because that is what we're all about these days. But it's such a plus in the job search, because as I said, you can hit a button, and how many people can you connect with like this? But it goes back to what I originally said. You know, who are the Oprahs in the room? Who are this? Who's that? Right? So you need to figure that out. So it's a process. There's no doubt about it. And getting a job is a full-time job, and it's draining, and I understand all of that. And there's days you just want to throw it all out the window. But the reality is then that's when you go take a walk, and you say, okay, well, what legacy do I want to be? What would I change in my life? What do I want in the next 5 years? And then work towards that. And your brand will start to come out. If it hasn't already started, it will come out more and more, and it will be easier. And then it will start to flow off your tongue. When I first started coaching, I'm like, well, I'm a marketing coach. Oh, I'm this. I'm that. I really didn't know what I was. Now I tell people I'm an executive business and career coach, and I motivate people to achieve their goals. Simple, sweet, people remember it. Okay? But it took time. So don't bully yourselves if it takes a while or your career summary is not perfect. It will evolve, but you do need that career summary, because also that helps you write the cover letter too. So once that's done, everything flows. Okay, questions?
No? A question I have is not really related to this, but one advice you said, you take the dates off your resume in terms of jobs and not put them in, because that would date us. Is that good to do?
As a recruiter, I don't like that. As a professional resume writer, yes. So 2000 and earlier, I don't put dates in, which is a problem if you've been with the same company going further back. But yes, I don't put dates in. I will put in previous positions include, and I just literally write them all down, and I won't put degree dates either. Okay. And people are like, well, that's because you're hiding something. Yeah, but wouldn't you rather get the phone call from the recruiter and then explain yourself versus them making a snap decision? Who's the first person that sees your resume if you send it in cold? Anybody have an idea? Who's the first person normally who sees your resume?
Computer.
Could be a computer, could be a receptionist, but usually it's about a 22-year-old recruiter. Okay? And I used to be one of those recruiters. That's why in your career summary, do not put how many years of experience you have either. You know, last week I passed my anniversary. I've been in the search business 28 years. I'm not going to put that in there. Why? Because what if a baby recruiter, as I call them, needs someone 20 years of experience? She sees that 28, I'm knocked out. But she starts reading about me, some dates are missing, she'll call me up. I sound young on the phone. I do CrossFit. So, and I'll mention that. I'll slip that in somehow. So it's not like I act my age. I'm healthy. I'm energetic. Let her bring me in, or let me her see my face and say, okay, you know, she doesn't look her age, or she doesn't look like this. Maybe she has 20 years of experience. And let them bring me in, and then let me sell them. What, we're all prejudiced, right? In some fashion, we're all prejudiced. You want to reduce the prejudices enough to get you in the door. That's the point. You want to get in the door. So when you have, you know, Rocky Horror lips or, you know, naked shoulders and all this stuff, that's going to knock you out. No, but I've knocked people. You're going to laugh, but I have knocked people out for these things. Or the man that has the striped tie this way and then has a scarf around him and the stripes are going the other way. First of all, you shouldn't have had a scarf on to begin with. You know, I had another client recently. I told him flat out, suit and tie, Jackie, his shirt, you know, like an open neck shirt. No. Look professional. I'd rather you dress up, even if you're more creative, so you can have a little more leeway. You can even put a little color on your resume. But you as a finance person, no way. You should have certain, like, more professional, not professional, but more formal font on your resume. That's another factor, too. So it's all part, you're in that Ken doll box. So it's your resume, it's your LinkedIn, it's your negotiations, it's everything. It's all got to be packaged. So next time you're in the supermarket and you see how things are like put on the shelves, there's a reason. There's a whole thing on how supermarkets are laid out. That's what you all have to think about. Do you? Everybody realizes the milk is in the far corner, right? Why? So they get you to walk through the store. It's the same thing because they market. They try to market, you know, certain things. Like now, all of a sudden, soon we'll be seeing, you know, graham crackers with marshmallows and chocolate, right? Because they're s'mores. So they get you to market this way. That's what you are. You're all these little marshmallows and pieces of chocolate and graham crackers, and you want to get it all marketed under the s'mores category. I know, it's getting a little crazy. But the point is, I'm trying to get you to think. I'm trying to get you to think open-minded. Okay? So all of you tomorrow, I'm giving you out folders, all of you tomorrow will link in with me. If you're not in LinkedIn, you have 48 hours to link in with me. Yes, I will come after you. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to call me. If you're interested in services, certainly call me, of course. But the other thing that I want you to do is in the next, well, today's what, Tuesday? By Sunday, I'd like you to talk to someone who knows you and ask them some of the things we're talking about, okay? And really listen to what they say. You know, call your best friend up and say, you know, I need you to describe me. What do you like? What do you not like? And really get a really good understanding. And then go back and think about like the Oprahs and the, you know, a lot of time, money, and effort got these people where they are. You know, this wasn't overnight success as any of them. We'd like to think they were, but it's really not true. They've worked very hard to where they are. You're all hardworking people. If you weren't, you wouldn't be here tonight. You'd be like, okay. So you're here tonight for a reason. So it's going to take time, but again, keep an open mind, and you'll learn something about yourself. And if you have any other questions, you can talk to me afterwards. Thank you.